President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court is federal judge Brett Kavanaugh. Joining us to talk about that is Illinois State University professor of politics and government, Tom McClure. Thanks for coming up to the studio.
Thanks for having me, Charlie.
Judge Kavanaugh has a long history of legal writing on the D.C. Circuit. Some federal judges' scholarship does not shape later Supreme Court opinions. Some does. Has Judge Kavanaugh made a mark in that way?
Well, he's issued around 300 opinions. Of those opinions, around 40% are administrative law. And I think that what you can glean from that is that he is a very strong advocate of separation of powers and does not like delegation to administrative agencies unless it's express. So I think it's fair to say that he probably would be someone who would be inclined to deconstruct the administrative state. As far as other areas, I think he's got a rather balanced record. There's a few things that do point out that the conservatives would like. For instance, he's certainly a strong advocate of the Second Amendment. He certainly is a strong advocate of religious liberty. But in terms of some other matters, he's got a mixed record. So, for instance, in employment discrimination cases, there are cases that he is favorable to the employee, whereas in labor cases, he tends to be more employer-oriented.
So where is his record lacking? Where is his scholarship not really on offer? Because, as you noted, the D.C. Circuit is heavy on regulatory stuff and not some of the other issues that are present in society.
Well, the issues that I think are most important to a lot of people observing this nomination process have to do with abortion, same-sex marriage, Affordable Care Act. And I don't think that we can read a whole lot into Judge Kavanaugh's decisions to come up with where he stands on those. He had the opportunity to make a statement as to whether abortion is something that is guaranteed under the Constitution. And in that case, he went to great pains to make it clear that he was taking no position on that. He applied precedent. And one of his colleagues was very clear that she was opposed to a interpretation that abortion was guaranteed under the Constitution. There haven't been any cases concerning gay rights that he has decided, so we don't know where he stands on that. And on the Affordable Care Act, arguments were being made by both conservatives and liberals that he is not true to their position. So it's unclear where he stands on those.
Is he a potential Justice Kennedy in hiding, yet to be unveiled?
I don't expect that. What I do expect is, based on his background, based on his record, I think that he would tend to be more of a conservative moderate, not necessarily on the social issues, but he might be close to the center of the court with Justice Roberts. That's what I would predict, but again, it's hard to say until he's in office.
He has written and suggested that sitting presidents should not be subjected to the criminal code and advance the theory of the unitary executive. Is that record significant now? That came early in his career.
Well, actually, he wrote that in a law review article published in the Minnesota Law Review. And in that article, he recommended that Congress enacts a statute that would immunize the president from civil or criminal investigations. So it appears from that article that he's not taking a constitutional position, saying that the Constitution guarantees it. Instead, he asked the legislature to take that action.
Each justice has their own take on the Constitution that can show up in sometimes surprising ways. Justice Scalia, for instance, was big on individual rights in some criminal law areas. Are there signs Kavanaugh will stake out some non-orthodox territory like that?
Too early to tell.
The finalists for the Kennedy seat on the court came from a list compiled by the Federalist Society. By using the recommended list, conservatives are hoping to avoid the possibility of another Earl Warren, William Brennan, David Souter, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Justice Anthony Kennedy. They turned out to be more middle of the road or even liberal than the GOP had hoped. Is that the way of business going forward? Is that the vetting process, what we're going to see on both sides?
Well, for all of his faults, I think President Trump has certainly used a model that is worth emulating, which is this very transparent list of vetted jurists who could be the next Supreme Court justice. So I would hope that that's what would happen, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. I think that the key, though, if you take a look at the list, it's not the social issues that are driving it. Instead, it appears that the Heritage Society, Heritage Foundation, and the Federalist Society are looking for judges who are more interested in an originalist type of interpretation of the Constitution and the deconstruction of the administrative state.
What will that mean going forward for cases involving corporate law and cases involving government agencies and cases that involve individual freedoms?
Well, it could go both ways. I don't think that it's necessarily a politically ideological issue on individual rights. For instance, if you take a look this last term on an immigration case, Justice Gorsuch went with the four liberals to basically say that there was a provision that was vague and found the law to be unconstitutional under the Due Process Clause. So I think that there will be victories for the right and victories for the left, depending on the cases that come before it.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Tom McClure, a professor of politics and government at Illinois State University, about the Brett Kavanaugh nomination to the Supreme Court. What does Judge Kavanaugh's clerking show about him? By your clerks, you shall know him. What can we be discerned there?
He's got a very interesting record. He's had 48 law clerks. Of those 48, 25 have been women, and 13 have been of underrepresented groups. So there's a great deal of diversity. But that diversity certainly does not suggest that he has hired people who are not strong candidates. In fact, 39 of his 48 clerks have gone on to clerk for other justices of the Supreme Court. I think the only other judge that has that good of a record is Judge Merrick Garland. Remember him? And so he certainly is a way of training people who go to the Supreme Court. And it's interesting who's hired his clerks. There are people who are both liberal and conservatives who hire them. In other words, he's well-respected at that level.
Women's issues? Any clue there?
Women's issues. Well, if you take a look at his life, it certainly shows that he has a great deal of respect for women. He's got two daughters. He coaches one of their athletic teams. His mother was a judge. So I see in his life, it appears that he is certainly someone who is sensitive to and views women as his equal.
And his clerks, the majority have been women, right?
That is correct.
So, in a conflict between original construction of the Constitution and settled law, as in Roe v. Wade, which is going to win for him?
I think what you're going to see is he's going to take a look at the entire record and make the decision. I don't see Roe versus Wade being overturned. It may be chipped away. When Chief Justice Rehnquist took the helm of the court, everyone expected Miranda would be eliminated. That's not what happened. It got chipped away, but the fundamental rule still exists. I expect the same thing with the right to abortion as well as same-sex marriages.
The liberal bloc of justices, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, has generally, actually, it's worth noting, voted more in lockstep than the conservative justices, partly because until now Scalia and Kennedy had their own ideas. Is that all about to change, or is he enough of a moderate to be that centrist part that Judge Roberts is turning out to be in the absence of Kennedy?
Well, I'm not so sure that they're always in lockstep. I think Justice Breyer tends to be much more conservative on criminal procedure than the other three justices. Is that going to change? I don't know. He certainly has a personality to work with people and I think be persuasive. So it would be nice to see them work together, but I don't know that there's really a hostility that exists on a personal level, so I would expect that they would probably continue to vote the same way they've been voting.
Courts go back and forth as societal issues change. Can we really say this will be a conservative court for a generation if Justice Kavanaugh or Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed?
With the exception of same-sex marriage and abortion, I don't see his votes being appreciably different than Justice Kennedy's. I would say that there really isn't a major change that's taking place if he gets confirmed.
How does he come down on equal employment and opportunity, employment discrimination cases?
There's a couple cases that I can think of. There's one where he basically said if there is a racial basis for a transfer of an employee, that that is a violation of Title VII. Another case is a supervisor's use of the N-word one time is enough to establish a racially discriminatory environment. So it appears that in employment discrimination cases that he is pro-employee.
Has the sustained campaign for conservative justices and the attention liberals have given to the same nomination issue when they've been on top changed the nature of the federal judiciary over the last 30 years to reflect the polarization in the rest of our politics?
Absolutely. The last time that I can recall that a Supreme Court justice was approved unanimously was Justice Kennedy and Justice Scalia's nominations. It's hard to believe that those two justices were voted in without any opposition. It's hard to imagine that can ever happen in today's culture.
But with the appointment of more conservative and more liberal justices, do we lose the middle in the judiciary?
That's a good point. I don't think that we lose the middle in terms of the appointment of district courts, which is the trial court at the federal level. And as those judges move up through the system, then they're potential candidates for the Supreme Court. But if you take a look at the last, the way things have been going, at least at the Supreme Court level, you tend to get the extremes.
Some judicial scholars, some federal judges tend to shape Supreme Court opinions with their own scholarship. Some pretty much try to avoid that. Where has Judge Kavanaugh come down on that? Has he really had some teeth in later Supreme Court opinions due to his lower court rulings?
11 times, as a matter of fact. His opinions have been adopted by the justices of the Supreme Court. So he's had a tremendous impact, which also lends support to my argument that he's going to have a persuasive power within the court.
How long does it take a new justice to find their footing, to begin to identify themselves and to make an impact?
Well, if you take a look at Justice Gorsuch, he was full stride this first full term. He wrote more majority opinions than any other associate justice. So in my view, it's up to the justice. Gorsuch was faster than most, but it didn't take him very long at all.
What are the factors that play into that maturation?
I would think a lot of it would be experience. I would expect that if affirmed that Justice Kavanaugh would be able to get up to speed very quickly because of his vast experience in opinion writing.
You remarked that the new center of the court is likely to be Justice Roberts. He's more conservative than Kennedy. What can we expect Roberts to do now that he has the power to shape majorities in addition to assigning the person to write the opinion?
I know that people will probably disagree with my speculation here, but he's going to protect Roe versus Wade. He is going to protect Obergefell. He is not going to see those particular decisions overruled because he knows that the majority of the public supports both of those. And in terms of the legitimacy of the court, he does not want it to lose that kind of influence as an institution. The same thing that he did with the Affordable Care Act.
How deferential to public norms, societal norms, do you think Judge Kavanaugh would be if confirmed?
Well, he's more of a textualist than Justice Roberts would be. But it would probably be a factor, it would be a great factor in terms of overturning precedent, but I don't know that it would be a factor when something comes to the court for the first time.
Could Democrats really hope for any better nominee than a well-respected scholar from the establishment Bush wing of the GOP?
Well, probably not. I mean, given the 25 on the list, and I guess it depends where you come. Libertarians certainly would have wanted Judge Don Willett. But as far as the other candidates go, I think that this is probably the best that the Democrats could hope for.
So does that how will the confirmation battle shape up? There are Democratic senators in Trump states, and there are moderate Republicans in fairly blue states. So, poking around the edges of those votes, what are you forecasting?
I predict a confirmation. If you take a look at the two most vulnerable Republican senators on this issue, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, they voted for Justice Gorsuch, and I would expect that they would follow suit here. And he might even pick up some senators who are Democrats, as was the case with Justice Gorsuch. It would be the senators from West Virginia, North Dakota.
Joe Manchin, John Tester.
Right.
So what does the public need to know about the matter going forward? Why would Democrats, if it's going to be such an easy vote after this, all the Sturm und Drang settles down, why contest this one?
Merrick Garland. The Democrats are still stinging from the fact that Senator McConnell did not allow Merrick Garland's confirmation hearings to even begin. And so I think it's just a matter of principle that it doesn't make any difference who President Trump puts up there. They're going to fight it because they feel that they've been robbed of a Supreme Court seat.
But if they're not capable of defeating the nomination, then why not just wait until they're in the ascendancy again and say, we're ramming our choice through no matter what?
I think it's a litmus test for loyalty to the party. So whether they lose or whether they don't, they're going to go out fighting. So I think that's what's going to happen. They believe that what happened with the Republican Senate was unprecedented, which is untrue. It's happened three prior times in history where there's been no action taken on the president's nominees to the Supreme Court.
When were those, by the way?
Well, they were not in the recent centuries. One was Millard Fillmore.
Okay.
Another one was John Tyler, and then the last one was Andrew Johnson. So it was a while ago, but nevertheless, it's not unprecedented.
But those also are in times of political turmoil too. I mean, those where one party was ending and another party was being created. In the case of Fillmore, Fillmore was a know-nothing, right?
He lost the nomination to his party at that time,
mm-hmm.
and then Franklin Pierce came in with the nomination, and they wanted to save the spot for him, and he made the appointment.
So I guess what I was going for was that it's likely to be in times of political ferment that this sort of thing happens.
I'd say that there might be some analogies, but yeah, that's when it happened before, although that wasn't really the case with John Tyler.
Democrats, though, have not traditionally paid attention to the importance of Supreme Court nominations as a campaign plank. Republicans certainly have over the last 30 years. Is it really important to use this as a mobilizing tool for the base in the fall elections?
I think Hillary Clinton did. As a matter of fact, in the debate, she said that she was going to appoint a justice who was going to overturn Citizens United. So she said that, and Trump said he was going to appoint a justice that overturns Roe versus Wade. So I think they both candidates made that an issue in their campaigns.
Tom McClure is a professor of politics and government at Illinois State University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.